Blog Talk Radio.
Plain talking, take us so far, broken down cars, like strung out old stars.
Welcome, everybody, to the Writing Mama Show today. I'm April 7th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. We are on the Featured World of Ink Network, part of Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Virginia S. Grenier. And just really quickly before I jump into today's show, I just want to share a little bit what's happening here on the World of Ink Network. Tomorrow, Marcia Casper-Cook has her show, and she has award-winning storyteller Rick, and it's Friedenberg, who will be joining her. I think it's a special World of Ink Network show. I don't think it's under her normal A Good Story is a Good Story. I think it's a special show that she is doing, and that will be at 4 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow, Tuesday. And then Fran Lewis will have a show this week on Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern as well, her book discussion. So far, I do not know who her guests are going to be on that show. But if you're into really knowing the behind the story to the book idea and the inspiration for the authors, and then, of course, getting to know the characters more of some of your best-selling award-winning books, Fran's show book discussion is definitely the show to check out for that. And then it looks like that's all we have so far for this week on the World of Ink Network. So I'm going to quickly go over, before I get into who our guests are today, what today's show is. So, of course, the title of our show today is called Writing Blind, and I use that because that's actually the blog title to Tracy McDonald's it's her blog / website, and she is a clean romance writer, and Tracy McDonald's my co-host today on the show. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. So glad to be here today.
I know. I'm excited to have you, and what got me to do the show is, and Tracy's been a guest before here on the World of Ink Network, it's because Tracy is a blind author, and she is a member of a group called Behind Our Eyes. And her and I are kind of talking, and we decided that we wanted to do a show to share some of the talented writers who are not sighted. And when I say not sighted, I don't mean all of them are 100% blind. You know, there's variations of blindness, but they don't have they're considered legally blind, even if they have partial sight to no sight. So that's kind of what our show is going to be about, is kind of talking about what it's like to write, not having a complete full vision, and what kind of got everybody
into
writing.
We try not to distinguish too much between people who are partially sighted and people who aren't. We all suffer from visual impairments that make it so it's more difficult to do what regular people do.
Exactly. But the idea was to have a bunch of you guys come on the show today and share your stories and to share about, you know, the different types of genres you guys write in and what got you guys into writing. So let's kind of share who's come on the show. You know everybody better than I do, Tracy. So I'll actually have you introduce everybody to the show because you're part of their group. And so you know these guys. You've been working with them for a number of years.
Oh, no pressure to show you how much I know, right? Okay, well, to get started, I'd like to introduce you first to Abby Johnson-Taylor. Abby is the president of Behind Our Eyes and the person who organizes our cross-country and cross-continent phone calls every other week where we all get together and we talk about writing. Are you here, Abby?
Yes, I'm here, yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me? Hello,
yeah,
can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay.
So, Abby, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you write really fast?
Well, I write fiction, nonfiction, poetry. I have a new chapbook coming out hopefully this summer by Finishing Line Press. It's called That's Life, New and Selected Poems. I also published another book of poems back in 2011 called How to Build a Better Mousetrap, Recollections and Reflections of a Family Caregiver. And the reason it's called that is because for 6 years I took care of my husband, who was totally blind and partially paralyzed as a result of 2 strokes. And then before that, back in 2007, I wrote a romance novel called We Shall Overcome. And my work has appeared in various journals, including, of course, Magnets and Ladders, which is our online magazine, and, of course, in the Behind Our Eyes, both anthologies, plus other periodicals as well.
Thank you. Abby's one of our superstars. You can see why we wanted her on the show today.
I'm like, wow, you do so much.
The second is Donna Grumman. Donna, are you here?
I'm here.
Donna is from Texas. Donna is our sweet Southern lady. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you write, Donna?
I mainly write fiction and poetry. I started out writing short stories for children, and a lot of my stories are based on situations with my animals. So I get a lot of feedback and story ideas from funny things that happen with my animals.
Donna has a great story about a seeing eye horse that we're going to have to ask her about later on. It's a really fun story that I've read more than once, and that was actually a top 10 finalist in Texas writing competition. So we're going to have to make sure we talk to her about that later. Thanks, Donna.
Well, I'm like, and thank you, Donna. I'm sort of thinking you take after my own heart, because that's where I started with short stories and children writing. is where I began my writing career.
That's great.
We also have Bruce Atchison with us. Bruce is from Canada. He's one of our international writers. Are you there, Bruce?
I am. I've written some short magazine articles for various publications, from underground zines to glossy, you know, regular magazines. I've written 3 books. One is called When a Man Loves a Rabbit, about my interesting interactions with house rabbits and the things that I learned from them living with them in my house. I wrote Deliverance from Jericho, a book about my 6 years at Jericho Hill School for the Blind in Vancouver. And I've written How I Was Raised. That's my journey from cultism to Christianity, where I was in an aberrant house church, and the Lord led me out of that and into proper knowledge of Him and His and the Bible.
That is actually one of my personal favorites as far as the writing is concerned, is because I'm a very religious person, and I have quite enjoyed Bruce's pieces on Christianity. Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate that. We're going to have to talk more about that later, too.
Can I say something else?
Oh, yeah.
Can I say something else?
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to say that I'm also hoping to work on short stories soon. Sorry about that.
Oh, very cool.
Okay, go ahead now.
Okay, our last guest today is Dion Lyons. Are you there, Dion?
Thanks for having me.
We are really glad to have you. We had another guest that was actually injured over the weekend, and Dion has agreed to fill in for us at the last minute, so we appreciate him being here with us. Can you tell us a little bit about what you write?
Yes, like most of the people here, I write a lot of fiction, some nonfiction. I write some poetry. I have written up a bunch of personal essay items that I posted on my blog website. I have just in the last year published self-published novel, and also a compilation of some of my poetry, and both of those are available in digital, and Sully Street, the novel, is available online. The other book is a poetry. It's called Ready, Set, Poetry. Writing for me is it's a brand new adventure in the last 4 years since I became visually impaired, and the support I've received from the blind community, my family and friends, and the folks from Behind Our Eyes has been incredible. There's a lot of inspiration, a lot of reasons to keep on writing, and it's a privilege to be here today.
Well, thank you.
We're
glad to have all of you. Yes. So I, being the person that I am, because I know, I want to let our listeners know, I guess I should say first off, I do have the chat room open. Obviously, our guest today won't be able to be in the chat room with you guys. So you can post questions or comments in there. I'll just relay them over the air. If you do have a question, though, you'd like to ask the guest, you can call in, which is obviously the best way for this show today. And that phone number is 714-242-5259. It's also at the top of our page for the World of Ink Network Writing Mama show. And you just hit 1, and then we'll know that you actually have a question. After you dial that phone number, it'll prompt you to hit 1 to let us know that you're in the queue to ask a question. And I'll try and bring you guys on if you do have questions and want to be on the show to ask them personally. But I know one thing that's going to probably come up that, you know, everybody who's listening to the show, even if they don't put it in the chat room, which no one has yet, I'm sure a lot of people are thinking it. What would be considered, and the reason I'm asking this is I wear contacts, I wear glasses, I take them off. I'm literally night blind. I mean, I can drive at night. I just try not to drive too much at night if I can avoid it, because I am getting to where it's harder to see when it's nighttime for me. But I am like borderline where they keep trying to tell me to do LASIK on my eyes because of how bad my eyes are. But I had a friend who was in a really bad car accident, and she can't drive because she is deemed legally blind. And this was, of course, 20 years ago that this happened to her. And I never asked her, like, you know, what, because, you know, she walks around her house fine, doesn't use anything to, you know, doesn't use a cane or doesn't put her hands out to try and feel for things. She can see things. It's just she can't drive because she's deemed legally blind. So I'm just kind of curious, for those who don't understand, I mean, I know that, I know, Tracy, you said, you know, you guys don't talk about, you know, how much one person sees versus another because you guys all have that visual impairment. But by law, what would be considered legally blind, just so people have an idea, at least the beginning degree of that?
That's 2200, I believe.
There you go. Yep.
Okay. Because, you know, everybody's like, you know, well, I'm 20/20 or I'm 20 whatever, and, you know, so I'm just, you know, a lot of people don't understand what would be considered that, where the line's drawn
in
them, basically.
You are considered legally blind when your eyesight is worse than 2200 and it is uncorrectable.
Okay. There we go. So now our listeners will know that, so they know what that line in the sand is by law for legally blind. Now, how many of you guys have been blind since the beginning of your writing career?
Well, I was born with poor eyesight, so haven't been blind, but I've just had very, very poor eyesight, 20 over 200 or 2400, and then I lost the sight in my left eye, and so I've just been using my right eye. Now it's down to 2400, so it's getting worse.
So you've pretty much been battling this your whole life. So anybody else who's been, it's been a lifetime thing,
yeah.
Or at least since you started to...
I was also born. I'm not blind. I do have some vision, but I've always been this way. So,
okay. I know, Tracy, you have, you know, I know you weren't always blind. I know you slowly lost your eyesight, but since your published author career has begun, I know you've been on you haven't been able to fully see. And is there anyone else who like started off as of our other two guests? Did either one of you start off where you started off as a pretty much sighted writer and then went and as through your career became a blind author?
That's what happened to me. I started losing my vision in the 80s.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm just curious, and the reason why I'm asking that because, I mean, being somebody, and this is something that goes through my mind a lot because I actually have an aunt who's now passed away that was very dear to me when I was a young kid, and as she got older, and my eyes tend to be doing a lot of what she did, because I remember she was the one who figured out when I was in in my later years of elementary school that I needed glasses because my mom didn't recognize the signs. I needed to get to an eye doctor to have them do a more thorough exam than what they usually do in the schools and stuff, just to say yes, you can see and you're fine, go to school. And as she got older, she actually became blind, I think, when she hit about 70. She had finally lost all her eyesight. And so I think about that with my own writing career. Was that a challenge for you to go from being able to see as an author and slowly see your vision going away? I mean, did that, because I wonder how I'm going to react to that myself as my eyes get worse progressively as I get older, because I won't have surgery done on my eyes. That terrifies me more than anything. I'd rather go, you know, it sounds weird to most people, but I'd rather go blind than actually let them touch my eyeballs and do surgery to them. So I'm just kind of curious, I mean, were you worried about your career as an author at all during that time in the 80s when that was happening?
I didn't become a writer until probably the late 90s, so I had already started losing my sight prior to starting my writing.
Okay.
So, you know,
when I very first started, I had some vision. I used magnifiers. I had a magnification program, and since then I have lost all of my sight completely. I don't see anything at all anymore. So it wasn't frightening as much as it challenged my confidence in whether or not I could do it.
And I can see that. And like I say, I'm asking because, you know, I know a lot of authors who are older, you know, and they're starting to battle the cataracts and all the different kinds of things. And I know there's, you know, procedures have gotten more, you know, advanced since the, you know, 80s and the 90s on that kind of stuff, but sometimes some stuff can't get corrected. And so I know there's a lot of authors who I even think about, you know, one day I couldn't use my hands to type on the keyboard, and I'd, you know, again, you'd be on, you know, the voice programs, which brings me to my dad has that. He has the nerve damage in his hands, so he actually uses Dragon software. What softwares do you guys use? I mean, most people obviously know about Dragon because that's probably the biggest voice program out there that you see on commercials constantly, but are there other programs you guys use for your writing?
I use System Access. It's a screen reader, plus it also has magnification, and it also comes with, but it's you get it separately. It's a network where you can get email and movies and access to newspapers and that kind of thing.
I use a product called Zoom Text. It's version 10, and that's produced by AI Squared. It's a screen reader and magnification program.
And I use a program called NVDA, Non-Visual Desktop Access. It's a free program created by a couple of blind fellows in Australia, and they believe that we blind folks shouldn't have to pay up to $1,000 or more for a screen access program when sighted folks can buy a monitor for a couple of $100. And, you know, so they provided this free program. It's not as good as JAWS or any of the other big ones, but it does the job, and that's what I like. Plus, it's got neat accents, like there's, you know, various British accents, and there's even a West Indian accent, which I think is really funny. The Rasta Robot.
That's cool.
It's really hilarious.
Yeah,
that's very cool. Tracy, do you still use JAWS? I know you did have JAWS. Do you still use that or no?
Yeah, I have. I have JAWS 13.0. There's an upgrade, but 13 is all I have because I can't afford the upgrade. Like Bruce was saying, it's expensive to get the equipment and one of the reasons it took me so long to get writing was because I couldn't afford the technology that I needed to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. I used to pay my kids $2 an hour to read what I wrote to me so that I could go back and correct it.
Okay, so I got all those questions out of the way because I know anybody listening to the show was going to want. Those were which I'm sure you guys are all used to, the basic, you know, us dumb people questions that we're going to always ask people who are blind, right? So I want to kind of, hey, I know I had to get them out. I knew they were going to start popping up in the chat room asking those questions. So I was like, let's get them out of the way now so we can get into the guts of the show. So let's kind of talk about some of the different writing. And I know you already mentioned a few of the different books, Tracy, you want to get back to. So did you want to go ahead and jump onto that and kind of talk about that a little bit and some of the different books? Or you want to talk about Behind Our Eyes first and what that whole group's about, because I think that's amazing that you guys have that kind of support network out there, because, I mean, as writers, we know we need that. And to me, that's just an extra added layer for you guys.
Yeah. When I very first began writing, I was in contact with the Utah State Services for the Blind, and one of the guys that I was working with directed me specifically to Bobby LaChance, who was the president of Behind Our Eyes at the time. I didn't know anyone who was a blind writer. I didn't know anyone who was blind and did anything in the writing industry at all. And so when I very first got started, he directed me to Bobby, and I got a hold of Bobby, and I was just amazed at how many people there were all over the world who are blind writers, and we don't know about it. And it was a wonderful experience for me to be able to be in contact with these people who not only know what I go through as a writer, but know what I go through as a blind writer. And like I said at the beginning of the show before we were on the air, these are some of the people who have been most supportive of me when I have gone through health problems and when I have released my books and when I have talked about my writing. These are the individuals who have been behind me 100% all of the way. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to invite them on the program today, is to let the people out there know that there are a lot, there are hundreds of writers who are blind and who do what everybody else does, but probably don't get the support and the recognition that everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about Behind Our Eyes.
Yeah, no, I would love you guys to. How many members do you guys have in Behind Our Eyes?
Right now we have approximately 70 members.
Wow, that's a big group. And is it U.S. and Canada, or is it worldwide?
Well, we're open to worldwide right at the moment.
I think we've got some person, or I don't know if she's actually a member, but I think at one point we even had somebody in Germany.
Right now we have a member in South Africa.
That's
and
it,
then,
South
of course,
Africa.
Canada.
Right.
We had someone that was interested from Australia, and the majority of other members are nationwide.
So how did Behind Our Eyes get started?
Well, it was started, oh, my goodness, back in, I think it was 2006, by a gentleman by the name of Sanford Rosenthal, who was in, he's in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, I think. He actually started this group, and we first started out with, you know, just meeting once or twice a month at a phone conference, and then we eventually, you know, we got a website, and then we came out with our first anthology in 2007, and then just this past year, after the 2007 anthology, then we developed an online magazine that we call Magnets and Ladders. And then in 2013. Thank you, Donna. We published our second anthology, which is called Behind Our Eyes, A Second Look. And so
Donna's our secretary. She knows all
Donna's
this
our secretary. She keeps me on my toes. I stray. As president, I stray, and he's always picking up after me and making sure I'm getting on the right path.
It's teamwork.
He keeps all of us on our toes.
And trust me, being a former president of our Heritage Writers Guild here in Southern Utah, and which Tracy knows because she's a member of as well, I understand that by all means, because, oh my gosh, the work that goes into being secretary, treasurer, president of, you know, and so forth in these groups, I know what you guys put in to do this, and I think it's great that you're dedicated, you know, to put in that free time to help these other writers, because it's not easy work at all.
And then imagine what they have to go through to be able to do this all over the telephone and without being able to see everything
that
they're doing.
I mean, so do you guys have once a month meetings or over the phone? Like,
we meet twice a month. We usually meet twice a month. And most of the time we have writing prompts. I have prompts that I give them to work on. We have an email list so people can send what they are working on to the list, and we get together twice a month. Mm-hmm. We critique those. Sometimes, every once in a while, we have a guest speaker, and that's how I met Tracy, because she was one of our guest speakers. And I think that, and then after that, I think she actually joined our group, or was that before? I don't remember. But anyway,
I joined right after, yeah.
Right after. Okay, that was it. Okay.
Now, how would somebody, you know, because I'm hoping we'll have some, you know, people who want to write that are blind or are writing that are blind and they just don't know how to go about this. How would they get a hold of you guys to find out more about your group and to get information and that support? Because, you know, it's challenging. And, you know, like I said, you guys have that an extra challenge on top of it. And I'm sure that can get very discouraging when you're first starting off as a writer. Because, I mean, I remember Tracy was just, you know, I remember asking that straight out, is this something I'll be able to do? Do you think I really can do this? I'm like, sure, anybody can do this, you know, if they have the desire. So, but, you know, it helps to hear that, especially from somebody like, you know, Trace was saying, meeting you guys and being in the same situation and coming from that understanding of, you know, the different challenges. So how would people get a hold of you? I know you've mentioned you guys have a website. Is there any other way, too, they can get a hold of you?
If they go to the website, BehindOurEyes.org or MagnetsAndLadders.org, there's a link for connecting with the secretary, myself. You can click that link, and if you'd like to join, there's a short process on joining.
Very cool. So what else do you guys do with Behind Our Eyes? I mean, you guys meet twice a month. You put out is it a yearly anthology, or do you just put out an anthology every so often?
Well, it is
kind of
whenever.
The
Magnets and Ladders is a quarterly online magazine. Our spring, mm-hmm. summer issue should be coming out here shortly. Well, our deadlines are if you want to submit material, but you have to be a disabled author to submit. But if you're a disabled author and you want to submit, you don't have to join in order to submit the Magnets and Ladders. You can, you know, our deadlines are February 15th and August 15th, and you can find the guidelines on our site at magnetsandladders.org. But then the anthologies just come out when we decide we want to put one together. It's not a regular thing. And there are a lot of work, so I don't know when we're going to do another one. This last one was
no,
kind
and
of...
trust me, I know there are a lot of work because I used to have an online magazine called Stories for Children magazine, and we used to do an anthology. And, yes, both of those are a lot of work. I've been there, too. So that's why I'm just like, wow, and I remember, you know, sitting here, and I mean – I have three kids, so I guess, you know, I could say it was pretty hectic in my house, but I'm going, I couldn't even imagine trying to do all that and not be able to see my computer screen at the same time. I remember my husband called me a psycho wife back then, so I couldn't imagine what he would have thought of me if it was, you know, an extra layer of, you know, work of, you know, trying, because, I mean, I was able to do my own editing and hire editors that, you know, and I could see the type of editing work they did, so, which I'm curious, do you guys have people in your group that work with you guys that are editors that are cited, you know, to help you guys with editing that you are able to refer your members to, or do you have like resources like that for members of Behind Our Eyes? I mean, because I'm sure that's a big thing for you guys, needing to find somebody to do that proofreading.
Well, that's what one thing they use is the spell check on your computer. That is a big help. And then there's several members that use Braille machines so that they can mm-hmm. feel punctuation and spacing and that kind of thing. So many people do everything on their own. There are some that have sighted help also.
You know, another thing is that I find listening to the words, I can hear grammatical mistakes and typos and things like that. The only trouble I have is with homophones, you know, words that sound the same but mean different things, like stare and stare, you know, words like that.
Yeah.
So I have to be careful with those. But I can often hear things that sighted people can't because their eyes trick them.
Yeah,
that's true.
Trust me. And I can speak on that being, you know, I'm not a proofreader, but I do like content editing and that kind of editing. And, you know, obviously you still will catch, you know, typos and punctuation and grammatical errors when you're doing that type of editing. But there are sometimes I won't catch it because my brain will just automatically correct it for me, and so I skip right on over it, like there. That's a big one. I see people do that a lot with there, because it's the three different spellings for which one you want.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I think one of the benefits of being a blind writer as well is that there are a lot of things we can hear with our screen readers that writers don't hear when they write because they don't read things out loud. Gets read out loud.
Well, and, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up, Tracy, because, you know, when I went through my process of learning to become a writer, that was, like, one of the biggest things that my instructor, I remember, like, I swear, I was, like, beating the bush with it constantly. When you write, you know, put your manuscript in a drawer, leave it there for a couple weeks, pull it out, and read it aloud. And I remember her constantly, every time I was in class, she would say that at least three or four times. And you're right, a lot of us that, you know, can sit there and read our manuscripts and not have to hear it aloud don't do that part. And I'm thinking, and I've read Tracy's book, and I'll have to, you know, check out the rest of your guys' work as well. But I feel Tracy's such a strong writer because of that, you know, having to hear it audibly. And, you can catch up when you're wandering or when your character isn't strong enough or, you know, those key things to writing. And, I mean, can you tell when you're listening to an audiobook if someone has really paid attention to reading? I'm sure you guys do. You probably can tell the authors who either have had somebody who has read their work aloud to them or has sent it to a really good editor who probably read it aloud as they're editing it versus somebody who sat there at their computer, typed it up, and then just sat there reading it on their screen and not listening to it audibly. I mean, can you guys pick that up when you hear other people's work?
Yes, most of the time we can. So, I mean, that's what we do with our critique meetings. People will submit a short story or poem to the list, and we'll either send them back an email, you know, with suggestions that they can either use or delete, and then we'll discuss it on our calls.
You get, so used to the way that your screen reader reads certain things that if it doesn't sound right, it just doesn't sound right, and you with me, I always tend to go back and check things up if JAWS isn't cooperating and pronouncing words correctly, or especially listening to someone else's work. You fall into certain habits when you use a screen reader, and it can help you, but it also can hinder you as well.
That's true. There are times when I need to go back and do word by word or line by line or character by character because the screen reader will distract me from what the actual words in the document are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand.
I find, too, that it's also, you can catch repetitive words a lot. I find that sometimes I use a word a little too much, and when I'm listening to it back, you know, and especially if I'm not just sitting in front of the computer, if I've got it on the little FM transmitter and it's going all over the house, I can suddenly realize, ooh, I've used that word too many times, or that doesn't sound right. So I go back and correct it.
That's cool.
That's very helpful.
That's very helpful. And I'm curious, because you mentioned that Behind Your Eyes, you guys have your critique groups and stuff. Do you guys do like a conference of any kind where you guys get together in person, or an online type, you know, conference call type conference, or anything like that?
Most part, no. Our meetings are usually by phone conference. Now, in the past, we have had online, or not online, but on the phone classes. We had a poet back here several years ago, Margot Longatuda. She is no longer, she passed away, but she many times came and critiqued some work, and then she actually did a class with us. Of course, we each had to pay her. But, you know, for like 6 or 8 weeks, she did a class where once a week we met for a couple hours. We had assignments, and we each critiqued each other's work. And so we've done that sort of thing. But most of the time we're either critiquing each other's work, or we have a guest speaker who's talking about writing. And often while we're critiquing, we get talking about other things, too, about, you know, problems that we're having with writing or publishing or that kind of thing. So we're very informal, you know, with our meetings, you know. Anything, pretty much anything goes, almost.
That's a very cool thing. I'm just curious because, you know, I know we all get discouraged in the writing world. I would love for each of you guys to share, you know, what you find to be the most discouraging aspect of the, especially because there's so many changes now in the industry. And, I mean, some people feel it's all for the better. Some people, you know, it's 50-50. Some people feel it's actually wrecking the industry. I'm just kind of curious what your guys' take is with what the different changes are and what you know, what you see as being frustrating with some of those changes or just in general that you think that need to change in the industry because, you know, right now it seems like we're going through another kind of transition, I guess, in the publishing world again.
I think right now many of the formats are switching to digital, so, you know, that's one of the big changes that all the publishing houses are going digital. There's still the regular print publishers, but many of them are switching to digital.
I don't think the digital books aren't as expensive, and so you're not making as much money off of digital books as you are off of the print books.
I'm just curious, are you guys worried that the digital books, and I know some e-books they have where they can be switched into an audio format where you can flip between either e-book or audio, but it seems like a lot of them don't have that feature. And I know as like for those of us who are sighted, there's a lot of us who are like, I like holding that book in my hand, so trust me, I've heard this e-book.
Yes. Oh, yeah, there are still people who like that, yes. Definitely.
Yeah, and so they're afraid that that's going to go away, that print books will go away. I
don't think they will.
And I didn't.
No,
I don't think they will either.
I don't think so.
I'm wondering if it's going to hurt. I just kind of wonder with everything going into ebook format, if it's going to hurt, or do you think it's going to help?
Well, I know it's hurting.
Who
it's hurting more is the local bookstores, you know, because
yeah.
You can't go into a local bookstore and buy an ebook. If you want an ebook, you have to get online. And a lot of people are, I think, even ordering, you know, print books online through Amazon. I mean, that's the major place. And so a lot of these independent bookstores, I know here in Sheridan, Wyoming, where I'm from, we used to have two independent bookstores, and now we just have one. The other one, you know, there just wasn't enough business for two bookstores.
Exactly.
So that's, you know, I think that's who's hurting the most. But, you know, I think there'll still be, people will still want, you know, a print book, you know, because you can't take an e-book to the beach because if it gets wet, then, you've lost the Kindle, your Kindle or your Nook, if it gets wet, it won't work. Whereas you can still, you know, you know, it might get a little water. If it gets a little waterlogged, it's not going to be a big deal. So
I read a blog post from an indie writer who said that they don't believe that hardcover or softcover books will ever go out of style because it's just not possible to curl up with a good computer in front of the fireplace.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Well, I totally agree. Yeah. And being somebody who has, you know, who has an e-reader in our house, the one thing that's kind of funny, which is why Kindle came out with the Kindle White, is because most of the e-readers have black backgrounds with the white type. But when you're out in the sun, you can't see that very well if there's sun glare, which is why
right.
They came out with
that's
the paper
true.
White
yeah.
Kindle.
That's true. Well, that's
welcome
another way
to our
world. Can't take Kindle to the beach.
Yes, it doesn't affect you guys. Well, and I've kind of wondered with the big e-book boom, because, I mean, it seemed like, and I like audiobooks, believe it or not. I know it sounds very weird, but I'm an audible learner. So when I found when I got into college, I didn't enter that when I was, of course, in high school and stuff, but when I got into college and everything becomes more lecture-based, I picked up really quickly my freshman year that I never had to open up my textbooks really that often, and I didn't have to sit there and write and take notes. All I had to do was sit in class, and as long as I showed up to every one of my classes and recorded the lecture so I could play it back and just sat there listening to my teachers, I was actually learning better than by reading or doing, you know, applicable, which is sitting there writing and taking notes. I was very much an audible learner. And so I tend to like books. My husband looks at me like I'm really weird because I have like stacks of paper books all over my house. But I tend to listen. I always look at him and go, I need to find this in, you know, as an audio book. And years ago, it was hard. Not all books were in audio. It was very hard to find books in audio. Usually, it was only if they were like a New York bestseller or like multiple award-winning books that you could find as an audio book. unless the author took the time to actually make it into an audiobook. And I'm
yeah.
wondering now with the big ebook craze, if that's going to actually increase, because for you guys, you know, I'm sure that's pretty frustrating that you can't, someone talk about a great book and you go to find it and you can't find it as an audiobook. So do you think
right.
that might be
that,
something that's
true.
With this digital?
That's true.
That, I mean, have you guys seen an increase in audiobooks on your end?
Well, I think there do seem to be more. We have our national, there are several sources, a couple sources that I know of. We have National Library Service, which is, we have recorded books that we can download online. And then we also have, there's something called Bookshare, which offers books in specialized formats to those of us who don't read, and you also get those online. And those are free. Of course, Bookshare, there's a yearly membership fee that you pay. To join, but then you get an unlimited books, amount of books that you can download. So I think those sources are seeing, more, books are coming onto those sources more quickly. Now, Bookshare, anyone can donate a book to Bookshare, and it will be placed online as long as the author approves. Which in most authors, there hasn't been a problem, I don't think, getting them up there. Now, NLS is pretty selective about what they record, the National Library Service. And we've been trying to get our second anthology, Behind Our Eyes, our second look, recorded. The first one has been recorded on NLS, but we're trying to get the second one. And it's been a kind of, Donna can tell you more about that because she's been working on getting that put together. But it's been difficult. It's difficult, harder to get books to them as opposed to getting them on Bookshare.
Well, as we speak, it is in process for being recorded with
NLS. Okay.
Yes. So
nice.
Hopefully it'll be out within the next few months.
Oh, okay. Terrific.
I've also been checking into having the book recorded through Audible. Beginning those stages. So I'm just finding out about that. So I don't have anything to report on that one yet.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That'll get now. Audible is another source of audiobooks, but they're it's like Kindle or Nook. You have to pay for them.
Right.
But there
yeah.
are memberships you can get that allow you to get one credit a month for books or some stuff like that. So you can buy them that way.
And I believe they're owned by Amazon also.
Yeah, they are owned by Amazon.
So.
Yeah.
There is a Kindle for PC that is accessible. It's not fully accessible, but it does good for just average reading. You can't find sub-chapter heads and this and that and the other thing, I'm told, but for just plain old listening to a book that's on Kindle, you can do that and have your screen reader read it out to you.
Bruce actually gave us links to be able to go to Amazon.com and download the desktop version of the Kindle, and then there is Audible accessibility on Amazon.com's website as well. And I have discovered there are a lot of free books and as well as very inexpensive books that you can buy on Amazon.com that you can read with the Audible accessibilities that come with the desktop Kindle.
Mm.
It doesn't work the same as another Kindle. You can only get things from Amazon. But like Bruce was saying, as far as basic reading, it has actually made it so that there are quite a few formats that I have never been able to read before that I can now. My book was published in a format originally that I couldn't even read myself. I had to have my publisher send it to Blio.com. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Blio.
Better.
But up until Amazon did something with their accessible Kindles, we couldn't get a hold of a lot of EPUB or digital format at all.
And now
so
you can get the Kindle
yeah.
and the Bard app and all sorts of different book reading apps on your iPhone.
Yep. There's a lot that can be done now as far as the computers are concerned, which is very helpful for the blind community. In fact, the National Federation for the Blind here in the United States has taken steps towards getting Amazon to work with the blind because a lot of their stuff is not accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, guys, my dog's barking. I have a schnauzer, and we have a cat that likes to go out by, that likes to walk in front of the window, and he goes insane. Sorry about that. So, gosh, he's being really loud, isn't he? Anyways, shut the door. He's in the room where the cat's at. So, I'm curious, when you guys get published, and Tracy, I mean, you brought up a great point where you mentioned how, you know, you couldn't read your book when it first came out format. I mean, sorry, I just went muted. Okay, I muted myself. I don't know what our switchboard's acting weird. I'm just curious, when you're working with a publisher, what's the editing process like for you guys when working with the publisher and going through the whole process of getting your book in print? Because I know how frustrating it is for me when I've gotten my books printed and I'm looking at my galas, and especially like for me, I write children's and I have like picture books. I mean, do you find that I don't know. I don't know if there's like any publishers that specifically only work with blind authors. I mean, I'm assuming you guys probably worked with, you know, like most of us do, with just, you know, you try and find a great publisher and you work with them, and you know, do you find that they're very workable with you guys, or do you find that sometimes you want to like hunt them down and beat them over the head with a stick and say, look, yeah, you know, I have an added thing that you have to take into account here. I can't see the dang manuscript and the corrections you want me to make, you know.
I've had problems with editors because, like, I can't see all those silly little marks they put on the text, so I've had them put the corrections or whatever in between asterisks, because I never use asterisks in my writing, so that was a bit of a difficulty, but other than that, I have had no real troubles.
My biggest struggles have been editing and formatting, and I just have a sighted person do it before I send the manuscript in, because they want to give you direction on editing and formatting, but they don't want to do it in a way that a blind person can have their screen reader read it to them.
And just so you know, the little editing stupid marks that I can say is because I've sit on the editing side of the desk, but I've dealt with editors that use their little editing, like, I don't use that as an editor because it drives me insane, but they're little, like, keys, you know, they have, like, the little key, you know, of, you know, spacing or typo or don't capitalize or lowercase or, you know, all their little missed a period, whatever kind of stuff. Half the time, I have to pull out the dang little, like, what does that symbol mean? So be glad you can't see those because they're frustrating, trust me. That's why I don't use them as an editor.
You have to explain it to the sighted ones too, huh?
Oh, yeah. Some of them are very similar to others, and if somebody has very bad penmanship, you're looking at going, well, are you telling me I need to make a space, or are you telling me to take the word out? Because it looks like either one of those symbols. Tracy knows, I don't use them. I always use the comment boxes in Word and
they love the
write
comment
out
boxes.
What I want. Yeah, I love comment boxes. I like those over the little stupid editing marks because, well, I hate those things.
Many times what I do at a critique meeting, I'll take my Victor Reader with me, and as they are critiquing my work, which they do out loud, I will just record what they say, and I'll know once I get back to my computer how I need to fix it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I've used Victor for that before, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, cell phones can also record stuff, so that's what I've got on my latest, on my new cell phone, is a recording function.
No, that's a great tool, too.
I've gone the self-publishing route through both of my published books, and I haven't been able to afford a regular publishing company or an editor. I relied on people in my writers' groups, my wife and my sister, to help with editing and critiquing and like I said, publishing. I've gone the self-publishing route through Amazon and Barnes and Nobles, and I had to create the manuscript myself and rely on what others were telling me to how to get the manuscript set up, but it was a very difficult learning experience at first, but I learned a lot during the process, and hopefully, you know, with some input from other blind people, the processes and steps that you need to go through for self-publishing, I imagine they're always making gains, but hopefully all of the steps will become completely accessible, I hope, anyway, in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, because I know self-publishing in general, depending on who you're working with, you know, whoever your self-publisher is, can be a nightmare to, you know, breathe, depending on the company. I know CreateSpace is one of probably, and I used CreateSpace when we did our anthology with my magazine. So I've done the self-publishing route through that. And I know quite a few authors who have self-published. All of them, of course, none of them are blind, so not going through the and a lot of them were very frustrated, and they were excited about going through the process because they said the same thing. You know, it was very challenging. I learned a lot, but I was just, you know, I love that you brought up the whole self-publishing part, because I know that's becoming a huge trend, especially in the indie market, is doing hybrid or self-publishing. And I'm just wondering, and I know a lot of the big publishers, I think it's Penguin, just opened up a subdivision that's a self-publisher that you can, they'll help you self-publish your book. And then if the book does really well, then they'll consider taking it on as an actual traditional published book through Penguin. I think it's Penguin. I may be wrong, guys. I may be using the wrong publisher, but it's one of the big guys. And I was really kind of impressed with that. And I remember thinking, because, you know, Tracy and I have been talking lately, because she's considering doing some self-publishing or hybrid publishing, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, I know what it's like doing this and trying to read all the different rules and figure it out. I'm going, what's this going to be like for Tracy, which is, you know. And that's why I've, like, kind of pointed to some people that I trust in that industry that I think would be workable and, you know, have the patience. And I would love for you to kind of talk about, you know, some of the things that you would love to see change in self-publishing to help you guys get more into that market for you. Because I agree, it's hard enough anyways to try and even understand what the heck they're talking about when you can see the rules. You know, I can't even imagine when you're looking at it and you have, you know, you can't even see what they're, you know, the little fine print. And you're like, oh, well, you need to be in X amount format. You're like, well, that's nice. I don't know what that means, because it's not like I can see what size, you know, what my, you know, PDF file size is when I'm sending it to you. Because, I mean, sometimes you're like, well, do you want to, you know, like for a children's book, you know, do you want to do it 8x8? And then it has to be, you know, in certain file sizes. Well, I'm sure that's not something you guys can easily figure out on your computer, because I don't know how much of that kind of detail your programs read back to you. So what would you guys like to see in the self-publishing market that would let you guys branch into that more as authors?
With our second anthology, Behind Our Eyes, A Second Look, we used PRGOT Publishing, which Pat, you know, put all of the stories and poems and essays together for us in the proper format so that we didn't have that headache. We had the you know, first draft type setup that the editor, Kate Chamberlain, put together. So we had that and sent that original copy to Pat, and Pat worked with it from that point, with the editing and everything, to send it to the printer at that point. So that was a big help, and Pat was very accommodating on helping us with any editing corrections and that sort of thing. So we were very blessed to be working with her.
I would like to see hybrid or self-publishing companies do a little bit more to help especially blind authors be able to pick out things like fonts or graphics or our covers for our books. My publisher sent me a copy of my cover and said, this is what it's going to look like. You don't have anything to say about it, but this is what it looks like. And I would have liked a description or someone to tell me what I was looking at. So that's one of the things that I think that publishers need to be aware of, is that there are a lot of things that are sent to us in graphic form that maybe they haven't ever considered that blind authors or people who aren't as sighted as well as anybody else would like a little bit more description.
Well, see, that's,
exactly.
I'm glad you brought that up, Tracy, because I was thinking about that just with you guys all being published, and believe it or not, Tracy, I was actually thinking about your cover, because you, Tracy writes romance, and I remember when she got her cover, she sent it out to, like, every one of her, I probably, like, almost all your sighted friends I wanted to probably guess, Tracy, and asked us what we thought of the cover, and I think because you write romance, and I know with romance especially, if you can't see, you know, you don't know what the graphic looks like, they don't give you a description. I mean, for all you know, you have, like, you know, the Playboy model on the front cover.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly.
And maybe that's not what you want for your cover. So I'm just curious, I mean, do you guys ever kind of worry about your covers? I mean, how do you guys, I mean, because that I would think would feel would probably be a huge challenge, because as authors, I mean, the last thing we want is for our book to represent something that is against, you know, you're struggling against value-wise, that you don't want, you know, to isolate people from or get a wrong impression about you or your book.
I've been fortunate that I've got enough sight that I can see what the cover looks like in general, but I've had people do my covers for me, and I gave them the general idea, and they just did it up and sent it out, and I was able to see that it would work. I've never yet had someone just say, here's your cover, and that's it. So that's the one advantage of self-publishing. You can get your own covers and do things as you see fit.
Yeah. On our second anthology, we also had a full text description that was sent to us along with our cover choices. So that was, you know,
awesome.
Very helpful in choosing and deciding what the cover would be.
Yeah, one thing great. I would like to see, though, is when the publisher sends us proofs of our work, they need to be in a more accessible format. Now, for Behind Our Eyes, that anthology they sent to us, I was on the committee for that, so I didn't have to proof the whole thing, thank goodness, but I wanted to at least check, make sure my selections were okay. I got a PDF document, and for some reason, my screen reader would not read it. It was indicating that it was all graphics. And so, and luckily I have enough vision that I could read it with a desktop magnifier. So I printed up the pages that had my poems on them that I had submitted. I was able to read them that way to be sure they were okay. But they do need to have, proofs in, you know, either probably Microsoft Word format is probably the best way to have them, you know, I don't know what Finishing Line Press is going to be doing with my galleys, but if worse came to worse, like, I can read them if I have to. But they do need to be, publishers should, you know, have proofs in like a Word doc. Or if it's going to be in a PDF, the kind of PDF it's going to be easy, you know, that's not going to show up as graphics.
Right.
And I'm not trying to do that with a PDF.
Right.
I've recently been given the opportunity by my publisher to take my galley proof, that is a DOC document, and download it onto zip drives and sell them at the National Federation of Blind State Convention. So I had to get special permission from my publisher to do that, but they have allowed me to put a document that is screen reader accessible specifically for blind people to be able to sell at the National Convention, and that's been really helpful.
You know what? Another thing is there's a company called Enthrill, Enthrill, that sells e-cards that you can have, it's got a code on it, and you can sell it for whatever you want, and the people can just download the book from their site, and it's transformat, so you don't have to worry if it's Kindle or Nook or whatever. So that's what I'm going to invest in next for my books.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's really great because then people have something tangible to hang on to, and it's, you know, like a postcard, but you charge, you know, a few bucks for it, and then they just go to their computer and type in the code, and down the book comes.
Can you give that address again?
Enthrill.com.
Enthrill.com.
Enthrill, yeah. I kept them up. I even had them phone me, and like I was asking questions like, what about copyright? What about this? What about that? And it's just a straight deal where you sell them you send your manuscript to them. They just put it on their site, and give you a box of cards, and there's no hassle with copyright or dealing with other people or whatever.
Because it still goes through your publisher when they buy it.
Yeah.
Well, that's I like that, and I think that's something anybody could use, you know, in the publishing world. That's a really, really great tool. I'm curious, what do you guys, and, you know, you guys each chime in individually like you have been, but what has been probably the biggest inspiration to keep you as a writer? Because, you know, it's a tough industry, and with all the changes that are going on, and like you guys are talking about, you know, now we have all the digital books happening and stuff. And more people are getting into self-publishing. I've heard authors tell me, well, it just seems like it's so saturated, or, you know, it seems like anybody thinks they can just sit down at their computer and write, and there's more to telling a good story than just, you know, an idea. And that's true. I mean, there's a lot to the craft. So I'm just, what keeps you motivated in moving forward as an author?
With me, it's one thing that I keep falling back on for a form of inspiration has to be probably family would be the most important thing. The love, the fabric, the structure of family. As I look back over my life, I realize it now more than ever that that's the most important thing to me. And also the last 4 years since my vision loss, the way that the blind community pulls together and really supports each other, the inspiration that I have found in the blind community and other sources as well. It's almost as though I had to lose my vision so I could learn how to see. It's been there all this time, and family but I always keep falling back on family. That's the most important thing to me to keep me writing. The inspiration is just it's always there, and there's always something to write about.
Yeah, for me, I just like crafting stories. I think it's fun to put a story together and make it up and get it sold and whatever.
Anyone else? The babies are all quiet.
They've talked themselves out.
I believe that I have a purpose in life, and part, like Dan, I believe that going blind is actually what helps me to be able to see. And I want to share that. I want people to know that their dreams can come true and they can do anything they want. And if I can do it, you can. That's why I write.
I think
it's fun to tell
great.
People stuff, too.
Yes. Well, and I'm curious with, you know, because it seems like you guys have all had, have variances in your life on, you know, of being blind when it started in your lives. Do you find, because, you know, part of storytelling, of course, is the detail, and Tracy does, because we've been in many where we've gone and have been guest speakers at different, from universities to conferences to workshops, and her and I have rotated actually talking about detail in conferences and talks and stuff. But do you find it hard sometimes? Because the one thing I noticed when I started as an editor and editing people's work is the sighted author tends to, unfortunately, focus so much on what they see, so they're always telling the story versus showing the story. I can't say how many times I have to tell these people, please, you know, show, don't tell. I feel like a broken record. I'm going, and that's like one of the first things you learn, of course, as an author, is show, don't tell. So I'm just curious, for you guys, do you find the reverse happens where I don't know how much, because Tracy and I have had this conversation many times, you know, how much you remember of, you know, what colors are or, that sighted detail. Do you find sometimes you have to work harder as an author to share that because you don't add it in enough, or do you think that it hasn't really hindered you as an author too much? I mean, because like I said, I mean, as a sighted author, I think, unfortunately, we forget about all our other senses and we just use the vision. And I'm like, no, what did it smell like? What did it taste like? What did it hear like? And I know when you're blind, those senses get heightened. So I'm just wondering, do you find the reverse happens with the visual part that you don't add it enough? Like that actually becomes something you have to really work at.
I think it's pretty much as it is for a sighted author, as long as you practice your craft, you know, you're going to develop those skills and all the details will work in how they should. You know, with me being partially sighted and previously being fully sighted, I remember all the colors and sights and that kind of thing. So I can incorporate all that also.
Yeah. Sometimes you can just hint at things, too. Like I wrote a fictional story of a secretary and her boss called her a dumb blonde. And, you know, I thought that would, you know, that would get the message, you know, through of what kind of person she looked like, you know. And I didn't have to say, well, she had blonde hair. I just said, you know, the guy called her a dumb blonde and that's it. So, you know.
Yeah, I have a hard time with description. Not see, you know, I have some vision so I can see objects and what they look like, but description is hard, you know, especially describing people. You know, because I can see people, but it's just hard to, you know, to formulate those descriptions. And I'm sure others who have limited vision have the same difficulty as well. You know, with someone who can see, you know, it's easier, I think, to do descriptions as opposed to somebody who doesn't see as well.
Mm-hmm.
No, one of the first pieces I ever, excuse me, I ever wrote in my Behind Our Eyes writers group was a piece, a personal experience I had at an airport in here in a local city of Bangor, and one of the members of the group told me I needed to tell and not show, or the other way around. I can't remember. Anyway, that was the last time that I had that form of critique with any of the things that I wrote. I tend to have a movie that plays in my mind, and sometimes I have to write, type as fast as I can just to keep up with the movie that's playing in my mind, and hopefully that covers all aspects of creative writing. It's worked so far. I have a lot of fun doing it, and I don't get pummeled too much with a critique with a group. Anyway, not too often.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know when I read you know, Tracy's book, that was like one of the first things I picked up was, you know, how all the senses were brought in so well. And that's why I can't wait to, you know, go get the rest of your guys' books and read them, because I tell you, I can tell when somebody just is letting their vision take over when they write, and I'm just going, you know, and I always use the example of Harry Potter, because everybody knows Harry Potter has a lightning strike on his forehead. But if you actually listen to what J.K. Rowling writes in the book, she never says, she just says it's on his forehead, but she never says where on his forehead. She never says if it's center, if it's off center to the left, or off center to the right, or if it's on his right temple or left temple. She never says where it is on his forehead. She just says he has a lightning scroll on it. And it's funny because if you look at, which you guys can't, but if you guys can see the book covers, on the book covers, she actually has them. It's the illustrator did the scar off center to the left. But in the movie, I think they stuck it directly center on his forehead, almost. and so I always use that as, like, my example when I talk about detail, and it makes people stop and think. They're going, oh, it's true. And I love that about, you know, what I can tell when an author, like, you know, does the whole show and actually learns to heighten their other, you know, their awareness to, you know, sight, sound, and smell and touch,
yeah,
instead of just vision, because all of a sudden it lets the reader be able to visualize in their own mind's eye, you know, what that character looks like. And I don't even think she ever really said Harry had brown hair. I think she just said he had messy hair. I don't even think she ever said technically he had brown hair. I could be wrong. She might say, like, his hair was dark, but I don't think she actually said it was, like, brown, or if it was black, or, you know, what shade. And so, to me, I always find that that's a stronger way. And, you know, that was, like, one of my biggest things when Tracy and I met up. I'm going, you know, I used to drill her. She'll probably tell you that, because I'm like, well, what about this and this? Because I wanted to get better about being more self-aware of my other senses for that reason. Because I'm going, to me, I like kind of having a very general outline of what a character looks like or the scenery, so I can fill in it in to meet my own, what I'm familiar with, so then I become more connected to the story. And I think you guys probably
have
that
mistake.
Advantage.
Lots of writers make, not just sighted versus blind writers. It's, we want to do mug shots instead of letting the reader produce our characters in their heads. So I think by using our other senses, we're getting away from mugshots. It might be easier for blind writers to do it. It might just be that we overly show and don't give you a firm enough picture. It's a balance that's kind of a struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of my favorite descriptions comes from Divergent by Veronica Roth when she describes her male character. She says, his eyes were so blue they were almost black, a sleeping, waiting, dreaming color. And I, that was the image in my mind that has always been what this guy looks like. He's in a movie now. I have no idea what he looks like, and I particularly requested that my husband not tell me what the actor looks like, because the picture I have in my head is the one I want to keep.
And trust me, Tracy, as a sighted person, I can tell you that there's been times where I've gone to the movies and I have, well, here's a prime example, and this isn't for me, this is actually my mom. My mom loves the Twilight series by Stephanie Meyer. We went to the movies, and of course, she had a total idea of how Edward looked. Now, who they picked to play the other guy, I forget his name, the wolf guy, she was totally happy with
Robert
when
Pattinson.
She saw who they picked. Yeah, when she found out that it was Robert Pattinson who was picked as Edward, she's like, he's not Edward. He doesn't look like an Edward. She felt lost. And it wrecked it for her now, because now when she reads the books, that's who she sees, and she's like, that's not my Edward. That's not who my Edward was. So
yeah.
I get it, you know. Yeah, movies can
that's
do that.
That's our goal.
No, I hear you. Is there anything else, Tracy, you would like us to, you're my co-host. Is there any other subject or topic you want to hit on as we come to the end of our show today?
I would just like for each of you to kind of tell what it is that made you write what you decided to write, how you were drawn to the subjects that you write to.
Well, the poems in my latest book are actually inspired by prompts on Robert Lee Brewer's Poetic Asides blog. Back in November, he had what he called a poem a day challenge, or pad challenge, where he would post a prompt every day during the month of November, and then you could write a poem inspired by that prompt. And so that's how this chapbook basically came to be about. Now, not all the poems in this book are inspired by those prompts, but most of them are. And so that's one
awesome.
Example. That's one example where I've gotten my writing. I'll let others talk about what inspired them.
In Behind Our Eyes, A Second Look, one of the short stories that I have included called Dependable Pal is about a guide horse, which I had for 3 years. And it's a true story of what actually happened when we went on a plane trip. So it's told in his point of view. So
the horse's point of view.
The horse's point of view, yes. And he kind of had, in my mind, he sort of has the Eeyore type personality. Nothing bothers him, you know. If his tail falls off, okay, you know, that kind of personality. So,
yeah.
Besides in the anthology, Donna, where can we find that story? That is a great story. It's one of my favorites.
Well, it was also entered in the pen to paper contest, writing contest for Texas Writers, which has now gone national, so anyone can enter it. And it was a top 10 finalist on the Pen to Paper website.
What's the address for that website, pentopaper.com?
You have to go to coalitionsoftexas.org, I believe. Or you could Google pen and then the number 2 paper, and you would find the website from that point.
That's great. Thank you. How about you, Bruce?
I've written in the past on my own experiences because, like with my books, for example, I'm passionate about house rabbits and how people have misunderstood them and not taken care of them properly. And then, of course, I wanted people to know about Jericho Hill School for the Blind and what it was like, you know, sort of a blow-by-blow of what it's like to be in such an institution, because I was surprised that a lot of people were shocked that I was sent away, you know, 500 miles to that institution, so I wrote that. And, of course, I'm passionate now about people that are teaching that if you just have enough faith, you'll be healed, and, you know, words that you say, you know, condemn or bless you or whatever, you know, it's all that stuff. I want people to know that that's not what God's like, and I used to get a lot of hassle at the church that I went to because my eyes didn't heal, and they prayed and laid hands and did all this, and one lady even got mad at me for not being healed. And when I told her I was diagnosed with glaucoma, she just blew up at me, and I wanted people to know that that's not, you know, that's an aberration. That's not what Christianity is really about. So I've been doing that. Now I'd like to get into some, you know, fiction stories, because when I was a child at the public school there, before I got sent off to Jericho, they, you know, I couldn't play the sports with the other boys, so I sat with the girls and told funny stories and whatever, and really enjoyed making them laugh. So that's what I want to do now, is to write stories and, you know, fictional stories instead of just my own experiences.
I can't wait to read that.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Dan?
Oh, goodness. My poetry, a lot of it has revolved around my vision loss these last 4 years. I have a tendency to, I don't think before I write. I sit down and I just start banging away, and before I know it, especially with my poetry, I have, before I know it, I've got 8 or 9 stanzas staring at me, and when I go back and read it over, it's almost as if someone else wrote it. My book, Sully Street, actually started out as a writer's prompt for one of my writer's groups. It was supposed to be a short story for a Halloween piece, which turned into, I got 3 pages into the short story, and I knew that it just wasn't going to be a short story. That 3 pages turned into 1 chapter, which turned into 5, which turned into 22, it turned into 46, and ended up at 53 chapters.
Wow.
I don't know where the story came from. I never thought it through or planned it or made notes. It just, like I said earlier, it was a movie that was playing in my mind, and I had to hurry up and type it out because it took me on a journey as I was typing it, and it turned into a wonderful story about the human spirit, about camaraderie, about family, which I seem to write about a lot. It was one of the most amazing journeys I've ever been on, and I've started the sequel to it. In chapter 19 of the sequel, and it's the sequel is writing the same way that the original story did. So I guess I have found a way to found a style that I like to write in.
That's the way it should be done. Stories that tell themselves, right?
Mm.
Well, that seems to be the way it is with me, and it's just as much fun to go back and read it as soon as you're done typing it out, because it's almost as though someone else is writing it. I don't know. I think I'm possessed, or I'm a conduit for a ghostwriter.
There you go.
So I'm curious on one more question too, because I one thing that Marcia and myself we talk about a lot here at the World of Ink Network is marketing. Because gone are the days where writers can sit behind, you know, their computers and typewriters and hibernate and write their books and not have to be out there person, you know, as an in-person kind of marketer. And as great as the digital age can be, the hindrance with it comes as well, I guess. And to me, the whole marketing, and which is so funny because my background is marketing, guys, but I find that it's so easy for marketing and social media to occupy a lot of my time. And I'm just curious for you guys, I mean, what is that like for you? Because, I mean, I know Tracy and I have talked about blogging many times, and, you know, I'll send her stuff, and she's like, well, don't send me pictures because I don't put pictures up on my blog. I'm like, oh, yeah, duh, right. You know, you wouldn't be putting me, and I have to, like, go, you don't need the pictures, you know, kind of thing. So I'm just kind of curious, do you guys do a lot of marketing? Do you guys have websites? I mean,
I do, yes. I have a lot of, I've got a couple of blogs. I'm on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. So I promote my stuff, especially my new book, quite heavily. It hasn't really produced any big sales. I'm kind of disappointed about that, but I'm still trying anyway, and I'm still showing Canada Pension Plan that I'm not just sitting around all day, that I'm actually trying to promote myself as a writer.
Mm-hmm. What are your websites, Bruce?
It's Bruce Atchison, and Atchison is spelled A-T-C-H-I-S-O-N, .blogspot.com, and the same goes for WordPress, bruceatchison.wordpress.com. And I've also put ads on a couple of other sites too, but those are the main ones that I usually submit to twice a week. I put a blog on there about my book or incidents that happened that relate to it, I should say.
Okay.
Anyone else?
I have a Facebook account. I don't have a blog account or anything, or a website, so mainly I use Facebook. We also have our book trailer for Behind Our Eyes, A Second Look, which is on YouTube. And I'd like to invite everybody to search on YouTube for the book title name and view our book trailer.
Oh, nice. I got a book trailer, three of them on YouTube as well for my various books.
I don't have a book trailer, but I do have a website. Well, actually, yes, I do. This is a trailer for my poetry book, How to Build a Better Mousetrap. But my website is www.abbyjohnson.com, and you can read some of my work there. There's also a link to my blog, which is Abby's Corner of the World, which is on WordPress. And I believe on the page where my poetry book, How to Build a Better Mousetrap, is advertised, I'm pretty sure it's still there. There should be a link to a book trailer. The problem is it's not, there's no voiceover on it. But I did put, I think the voiceover script is there. I'd have to look. I can't remember because that was a year ago. The voiceover for that is there on the page for anyone who is visually impaired and can't read the screen. It's on my page there, close to the link. So you can read the transcript of the video if you can't make it out or read the print. So
that's really neat. Yeah, very cool. Anyone else?
I'm on Facebook as well as LinkedIn. I don't do much with LinkedIn, and I really don't do a lot of marketing with Facebook other than I have it tied into my blog site. Whenever I post a new blog entry, it automatically pops up on my Facebook page. My blog
What's
site
your blog
is on,
site, Jan?
My blog site is on WordPress. It's dplyons.wordpress.com. I've had that up and running for about 3 years.
And that's L-Y-O-N-S, I think, isn't it, Dan?
Yes, L-Y-O-N-S.
Yeah, not, yeah.
And,
so it's dplyons.com? .wordpress.com, I think, isn't it, Dan?
Oh, wordpress.com, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm taking notes. I just want to make
that's
sure I'm
okay.
getting them right.
Well, I think it's great because I know it's changed so much in the industry, and I know there's still authors that are like, I don't want websites, and there's some that are like, I absolutely get social media. So it's nice that you guys are doing both or one or the other and getting out there, because that's one of the big changes that I see so many people struggling with. And, you know, my background is marketing, and so I understand the importance of it, but I kind of started writing to get away from marketing. I'm going, and here I am, I'm marketing again. Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm glad all you guys came on the show and shared your stuff. I do have on our World of Ink Network blog your guys' information and the links. And then, of course, our show today is it'll be on Blog Talk Radio. It'll be on here as a podcast later, and of course we have a show description for the show that has the links and bios and stuff in there as well, so our listeners can click onto those and find you guys as well. Is there any last words any of you guys would like to share with the listeners today?
thank you for inviting me, and
yes,
I
definitely.
Enjoyed.
Thank you.
Yes. Enjoyed being here.
Same
yeah,
here.
Let us know the link where we can hear or download the show, because it'd be nice to have as a keepsake.
And yeah, just pass it on. I'd like to put it on my blog so the people who read my blog can listen to this.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I will. I think I know Tracy. I sent sent her because she put it up on her writing blind. Which, by
oh,
the way,
can, okay,
Tracy,
we'll put it on.
Because
I always go to the blog. Okay.
Yeah, I was saying.
You
Tracy,
can find
Tracy
it on my
blog,
or you
yeah,
can find it on my
blog,
page, or I also sent you a copy of the outline of the show before we got started,
oh,
and
right.
the link to
the
link to the World
right.
Inc. Network should be on there. Yeah, but I can send it all to you again this afternoon.
Yeah, and that should be it's the direct link, I believe, to today's show page. I'll send Tracy that again just to double check so she can send it out to you guys. And just so everybody
I'll forward
knows,
it to
Tracy,
everybody.
Yeah, and Tracy's
good.
Blog, for those who are listening to the show, it's TracyMcDonald's dot your blogspot, right, Tracy?
Yep, TracyMcDonald's.blogspot.com.
And it's Tracy, it's
and then
T-R-A-C-I.
T-R-A-C-I, the lady without the eyes, has an eye
yeah,
in her name.
She has an eye in her name, so they get the right spelling for those. And then McDonald's. So that's Tracy's blog for me as well. It's been a pleasure having you guys on here, and I'm definitely, I'm sure Marcia, because she's listening to the show as well, I'm sure she'll also, we'll go out and pick up your guys' books, and we'll also share them out the World of Inc. Network as well. So, those
and
who
thank
follow
you
us.
So much, all of you,
well,
for coming
you for
on and
us.
Talking about Behind Our Eyes.
Yes,
I appreciate
yes,
all
welcome.
Your contributions and your help.
Thank you.
And, we enjoyed it.
And that you guys, and that you guys are out there writing, because you know it's great having authors who want to share and are open to help others and to, you know, share the things that you guys love about writing, because it is. I mean, I think it takes all of us getting to know each other and to turn to each other and ask questions to keep us going forward, because, you know, even though we write by ourselves in our rooms, it's nice to, you know, as we know, to connect with each other, because it can be a lonely business at times. So,
yeah, no doubt about it.
It's been great. Yeah, it's been great having you guys on the show today, and we'll definitely have to have you guys come on for various shows in the future, too, because it sounds like you guys have a lot. I mean, I was making notes. I mean, I'm going, wow, I didn't know about this, and I didn't know about this, and I'm going, this is stuff I could probably even, you know, use. So it's been a great show, so thank you for that.
No problem.
Well,
thank you.
And then I want to let our listeners know one more time that here at the World of Inc. Network, we have a few upcoming shows. Tomorrow is Marcia Casper Cook's show with award-winning storyteller Rick Friedberg, and that's a special World of Inc. Network show. That's at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Then on Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern is Fran Lewis' show, Book Discussion. Guests soon to be added to that. Still don't have those. And those are the shows that are happening this week on the featured World of Inc. Network here at Blog Talk Radio. We thank you all for listening to the Writing Mama show today. And we wish you all a great week. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I guess that's that.
Follow me to the World of Inc.